We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown!
For the touchdown by Moore.
And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. 1, 2, 3.
Keep pounding.
Welcome back to another episode of The Roar, brought to you by Blue Wire. I am extremely excited to bring one of my favorite draft guys in the business. His name is Emery Hunt. You can find him on Twitter at FBALLGamePlan. And you could also find his work at Football Game Plan and CBS Sports. And I do want to give a plug to his recently released draft guide, which you can find on his Twitter page. And you could also find it online as well. Emery, what's going on, brother?
I'm doing fine, man. I appreciate you having me on. And you can find it at footballgameplan.com/2022. Draft guide.
Yeah, and I've been digging through it. It's very, I mean, you went through a lot of prospects, so which should be expected. And anyone who doesn't know Emery, he calls college football games in the fall, but he's not necessarily going to, like, your, you know, division, you know, one universities. He's going, you know, to the smaller schools, and that's what I appreciate about the work that you put in, because you're scouting not only just, you know, the big schools, but also the schools that don't really get that much notoriety. I know a few times I tried to catch up with you when you went to Georgetown, but what goes into, like, are you just, like, kind of starting from scratch, like, at the beginning of, like, the summer when you kind of create this type of database and just go through each prospect? Or is this just something that you kind of scout as you go, essentially, during the year?
You know, that's a great question. And I don't think a lot of people know my process in that regard, because you touched on it. I'm calling college football games during the regular season, and I'm also covering the NFL with CBS Sports, in addition to covering college football outside of what I'm doing. And I have these three small college football shows on Saturday mornings on Next Level Sports, which is channel 623 on DirecTV. So I'm doing a lot during the season. So I really don't get into the draft until January, when the regular season ends of college football and I start to go to these all-star games. That's when my draft work comes into play. So I'll start formulating a list around mid-December when bowl season starts, or early December when bowl season starts, just to get names that I've accumulated over the season and put together a list of guys to watch. But then I go to the all-star games in January, all the smaller ones to the big ones. And so when February comes, I would say usually the day after the Super Bowl is when I start grading. So you figure from February to this year, because they had that HBCU Legacy Bowl first year in the middle of February. So that took a week away from me breaking down film. But you go from February 1st to whenever you're done. And usually I'm done before the combine, but this week I wasn't able to do so. But so by the time I got to the combine, I was at 400 prospects. I had no offensive linemen graded. So I had to do about 600 or so prospects once I got back from the combine, because that whole week was gone. So it's literally 12-hour days. I'm up at 5 a.m. I start at 5:30 and I'm done at 7:30 p.m. I'll take about a 2-hour break in the middle of the day, go work out, go eat, and get back at it about 2:30 and go to 7:30. So it's literally 12-hour days of just straight watching film.
And I want to stick with the HBCU Legacy Bowl, which you mentioned, because obviously it's gaining steam now with Deion Sanders' program at Jackson State, but we've seen a lot of really talented prospects come from like a North Carolina A&T, Norfolk State. I've seen prospects come from South Carolina State, North Carolina Central. There was a cornerback I think they've had a couple years. What did you name me some prospects that you felt really kind of caught your eye there at the HBCU Legacy Bowl? And if there's any other prospects who probably are bigger names that couldn't make it.
You know, what's interesting is that I was shocked that over the course of, not just at the HBCU Legacy Bowl, but let's say over the smaller all-star game circuit, how many Fayetteville State pro prospects they have. And if it wasn't for Bowie State, Fayetteville State would be the 3-time CIAA champions, but they could beat Bowie State to go to the playoffs. But you talk about Joshua Williams, who was at the combine at the Senior Bowl, but at the HBCU Legacy Bowl, you had Keyshawn James, a defensive lineman that could play any technique up front. So he can go from the 7 all the way to the 0 technique and play it well. He was outstanding all week long. He's someone that's versatile, that's quick off the ball, has a variety of ways to get to the quarterback. And you also look at Elvin De La Rosa, who played opposite of Josh Williams. But the cool part about him is that he was a safety at Fayetteville State. And, we got to see him extensively at corner at the HBCU Legacy Bowl. And he's matched up against Trey Gross, the outstanding wide receiver at Delaware State, who I've seen a lot of over the years because I do a lot of Morgan State games, like you mentioned, in addition to Georgetown games. So Delaware State is playing those two schools. So I've watched Gross progress in his career, and to be able to go toe to toe with him as a corner at 6'1", 207, there was a lot of eyebrows being raised at how well Elvin De La Rosa did there. And in terms of quarterbacks, you look at Aquil Glass, who's been excellent. And I think he's had one of the best all-star game circuits you could have on the offensive side of the ball, because he was outstanding at the NFLPA Bowl. If it wasn't for Cole Kelly, he would have won MVP. Then he goes to the HBCU Legacy Bowl, which is I would say 2 weeks removed from NFLPA, picked up right where he left off, played well. So I thought he really improved his stock also.
Yeah, it's interesting because, so many people focus, rightfully so, it just gets a lot of attention on, the bigger prospects that come from the Power Five schools and whatnot. But I think that, the best teams in the league, organizations, they really kind of just make sure they don't miss a mark. And, adding the, HBCU Legacy Bowl and just trying to put more eyes on it, especially now with what Deion is doing at Jackson State, it's going to give these guys a bigger platform. And I think it's, it's unfortunate sometimes players just kind of go through the cracks and, teams miss on them. But, with how much investment is in the draft, I think it just behooves you to, make sure you're scouting every school. And I don't even say that just for, American schools. I mean, if there's the game is growing internationally too, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know if you remember that one kind of crazy workout receiver who came out of Germany a couple years ago.
Oh yeah.
But it's just stuff like that. Like I really feel like, the platform that these guys are getting now, not just again for HBCUs, but for, there's a number of all-star games now. It just gives guys a better opportunity. What I appreciate about your work is that you don't listen to the consensus. You have obviously your own evaluation process and you go into these guys very thoroughly and you have your own opinions on them. But let's just start with the running backs, because I know that's a position that you scout really closely. The Florida State guy, his name is kind of escaping my head.
Deshaun Corbin.
Yes, he's your running back one. What do you see out of him that kind of gives you like a lot of excitement?
It's the marriage between the vision, the footwork, and elusiveness. And I think for me, at least, you know, having played that position, knowing how important it is to make guys miss and be able to see what's happening in front of you, to see someone that has that, it's like, man, you know, you wish you had that, right? And you watching him run, you're like, you see it from a 10,000 foot level because you're up in the press box or whatnot, you're watching on film and you're seeing it play out. But him on the field is seeing the same thing that you're seeing up there. And that's when we talk about player A has great vision. Mm-hmm. And for him, it's the vision combined with let's say, for instance, I could see the cutback. I know it's there. I see it. But the way my athleticism and footwork was set up, I'm not going to get there. So I'm going to just keep it front side. But someone that is very good athletically, has a vision and the footwork, he not only has options in the run game, he can also get there. And that's the unique part about players like him. So I just thought the fact that he could be his own blocker, he has a good burst, he has a breakaway speed, and I think he has still room to continue to get better as a pro. I'm excited for him because, you know, I think we forget he was at A&M. He transferred to Florida State. So he's someone to me that has those traits that you need to be successful at the pro level.
Yeah, it is interesting because he does play at a big school like Florida State. He went to the, you know, pretty big all-star game, the East-West Shrine Bowl, and he went to the Combine too. So I'm surprised that we haven't heard his name. And then you have, you know, two guys that are probably near the top of a lot of people's running back boards, Spiller and Hall. But and then I think you have Kyren Williams after that. But the other guy I really want to discuss with you is Zamir White, because five-star prospect coming out, really exciting player for Georgia. But, you know, obviously he had the injuries and that kind of, you know, maybe took a little steam out of his stock. But when I watched him this weekend, I was really excited with his potential in the pros. I really feel like he's a guy that can have a better pro career than college career.
Yeah, absolutely right. And as you saw in the guide, I compared him to Frank Gore for that same sentiment, because I feel like, and this is a comparison that, you know, maybe some people will understand or some people will get, because if they could remember, but, you know, I always told people, as good as DeMarco Murray was at Oklahoma and with the Cowboys before the injury started to kick in again, go back and watch his high school film, because that was pre-knee injuries. This dude was on a whole nother level. And it's sad that we didn't get to see that DeMarco Murray because of the injuries, mm-hmm. but we still got a pretty good version of it, right? And I feel like Zamir White is that same guy. His high school stuff just didn't make sense. And I thought last year we started to see seeds of that Zamir White come back into the fold, which is great moving forward, because, you know, you watching his interviews and talking with him at the combine, man, you just root for the dude. Like he's just got a great disposition on life. You know, he really is passionate about playing football, and wants to be great at it. And I just like seeing good things happen to good people. And he's a good person from what I've been able to gather, but his game is trending in the right direction. I think he's getting back to what we saw of him coming out of high school. Now, it won't be a true one-to-one, but he's going to be like 90% of what he was coming into Georgia, which it was ridiculous. And I think we started to see those things last year, which made me excited about him, you know, breaking him down and just becoming more familiar with his game as the season went along.
Yeah, another guy who went to Georgia, a big five-star recruit. I think he was like his journey, at least from a high school player to college, was well-documented. Isaiah Crowell a few years ago. And obviously, he left Georgia for, you know, reasons that are pretty clear, off-field issues. But he had a pretty successful NFL career, at least his first 3 years. He was very productive for the Browns when they signed him as an undrafted free agent. So that's, you know, I mean, different players, obviously. Crowell is much more more of a bigger physical runner, but White has much more explosiveness. You know, tight ends now, you know, Cade Otton is a guy that I also just recently watched, and you know, watching him against Michigan, and he was playing really competitively against those two edge rushers, whether it was Hutchinson or Ajabo. And, you know, his route running, I didn't really see much of. I don't think they utilized him as much as I'd like to. But I think that blocking, at least for tight ends, is, you know, very difficult. And if you have some sort of like base foundation as a blocker, I think that can make your upside as a receiver kind of untapped. I mean, we saw it a few years ago with George Kittle, who, you know, the offense he played at Iowa, he was blocking like 80% of the time. Are you seeing the similar thing with Kate Otten and his kind of transition?
Yeah, and you touched on it. If you're able to block, or you don't have to be, you know, an offensive tackle out there, but if you right. are able to, one, compete and also be productive enough, man, that, like you said, that's a great foundation, because a lot of tight ends don't even have that foundation. So Otten has that foundation, and he was pretty good at it. I said this before, I feel like he was just criminally underutilized at Washington in that regard in the passing game. So another situation where a guy will end up being a better pro than collegian because of how he was utilized. And that's what I love about the whole scouting process, because you tend to see, you know, you watch guys and you'd say, especially when you also cover the NFL. So now, you know, what works, what doesn't work, what will work, what won't work. And you say, all right, well, I can envision this guy playing the pro game and fitting in nicely right away. And that's how I felt about Otten, which is also surprising when you see, you know, as much as you follow guys on Twitter and draft Twitter and guys talk about prospects all day long, and you don't see his name pop up as someone that, you know, people should really focus on that could be a really good pro. And the league may view Otten differently than we all view him, which then should have people go and, you know, look back at their process and say, hey, okay, what am I looking at? What am I missing? But I feel like Otten is going to be someone that's going to be a really solid pro and probably could play, you know, injury, you know, aside, can play right away and be effective day one.
Yeah, we've seen tight ends from that program go pretty high. Drew Sample and Will Dissly. I think Will Dissly just got a second contract too. So, I mean, it's certainly a program that's been in flux since Chris Peterson stepped away. And, you know, we'll see where they go in the future. I know, you know, the former head coach did a pretty good job of producing, you know, these cornerbacks, which, you know, this is always an interesting parallel. But, you know, one of your other tight ends, Garrett Prince from UAB. This is a guy, I didn't really get to see him much, but I did kind of check him out at the East-West Shrine game, and he looked pretty pretty interesting. Are you also kind of a fan of his going into the league?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. This dude here is – I remember talking to him at the – I interviewed him at the East-West Shrine Bowl, and he's a city kid, so city kids just different. And I love city kids. I'm a city kid myself, to where, you know, you could tell this dude played a lot of football growing up, play, you know, basketball. Is he just got some sauce with them with how he runs his routes. And he was out there cooking guys that, you know, during the Shrine Bowl week. And I was shocked that he wasn't a combine invite. I thought for sure, based off his athleticism, how he runs routes, he would have been a shoo-in to be at the combine, but he wasn't. So I automatically said he's going to be a guy that's going to get drafted that wasn't at the combine. So I have him as my number one flex tight end, which is almost like a receiver. He compared his own game, and not in an arrogant way, but said, I do a lot of things that Travis Kelce does, which watching him run routes, you totally see what he's talking about, because he has that fluidity within his route running. So he's going to be open a lot. He catches the ball well. And he's someone that I remember during the regular season, I watched him passing, because, you know, you watch games from a different perspective when you're not scouting prospects. I forget who they were playing. I want to say they were playing Jacksonville State. Mm-hmm. I want to say it was the first game of the season or whatnot. And this dude was like running past dudes, he had a good touchdown catch, I believe, in the corner of the end zone. And this was really his first year just blossoming as a player. So he's quote unquote a 1 year wonder. But this dude's 1 year where he just really just tore it up out there on the field, and also to go out to the All-Star game and do well there, just bodes well for his future.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited to get into him, because his pro day numbers do look pretty exciting too. He ran a pretty good three cone and short shuttle. And he jumped pretty well too, on the broad at least. You know, switching out of receivers, I don't want to get into a lot of the big names. I think a lot of people will have plenty of time to dissect those later. But a couple guys that maybe aren't well known that you have within your top 10, Lance McCutcheon from Montana State and Isaiah Weston from, you know, Northern Iowa. Weston, he was at the combine and he played in a couple all-star games as well. But McCutcheon, I mean, he seems to be very high on your radar.
Yeah. And listen, this is funny because I make fun of it, but I'm also part of the people I'm making fun of. When you go to an all-star game, and if it's your first time seeing a guy, you're just like, whoa, like this dude is the best prospect ever, right? And I did that more so with Weston than I did with McCutcheon. I saw McCutcheon earlier in the season when they played Sam Houston and when they played North Dakota State in the championship game. And watching him, at first I was like, man, this dude from I forgot where I thought he was from. I thought he was from Penn State because they clearly wear gold and blue at Montana State. So I'm looking up, watching practice because we're at the Rose Bowl. And, you know, where you're sitting, you're, you know, it's close, but you're sitting up. So you really can't see logos on helmets. And if you have a white helmet with a logo on it, it's, everybody looks the same. So I'm like, man, it's Penn State.
Yeah, no, the Rose Bowl isn't good for that. Right.
It's kind of spaced out. And it's so we're sitting there and I'm watching. I'm like, yo, who's this Penn State receiver? I don't remember him. He's a big dude and he's blowing past these dudes. So I'm looking at the roster like, that's a Montana State helmet. Like, whoa, like this dude McCutcheon is baking these dudes. And it was consistent on either side of the field. No matter who lined up, he was getting off the line of scrimmage like he was. He was consistent in that regard. He was able to stack and just accelerate past guys. And Weston was doing the same thing. And it's funny because Weston had a white helmet out there too. I'm like, yo, what's up with everybody with these alternate white helmets? So both guys are taller guys, physical guys that can run. And I know McCutcheon had some inconsistencies in the North Dakota State game. You know, he dropped a couple passes, but I mean, it was that game, it was wet out there. You kind of want to see him catch those wet balls, but he really separated from the defensive back. But you saw that at the NFLPA game against, you know, Power 5 corners, G5 corners. So he's someone to me, and I compared him to Tim Patrick. So he's someone to me that I think is going to, you know, play really well. He's going to test well. They got a bunch of dudes at Montana State this year that are athletic freaks. They're going to just
– it's an underrated program.
A very underrated program. And one of those programs that I think – again, there are certain schools in that area, the Big Sky, and, you know, you add North Dakota State in there too. They are essentially group of five programs.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and they could easily make that transition. That's why they're always beating, you know, G5 teams that they play. So that, you're right. They're underrated program, underrated athleticism. And he's probably one of three Bobcats that could get drafted.
Yeah, I think well, the Cooper Cup went to Eastern Washington, right?
And that's Eastern Washington, yep. And they consistently beat Washington State or someone like that.
Yeah, I hate their field. The red field drives me nuts. You know, switching to interior linemen and two guys that I'm sure the consensus agrees with, Zion Johnson and Kenyon Green. But, you know, a guy who was kind of, at least from my understanding, that's kind of risen throughout the process. And you're not only hearing it from draft Twitter, but also the offensive line guys on Twitter. They also like him a lot. The interior lineman from Wake Forest, Zach Tom, he's number three on your guard rankings. And I mean, this is a guy who, you know, has kind of really risen through the process. I mean, have you been a fan of his for a while?
I've been a fan since I started watching him. And that's the good part about, again, I keep bringing this up because I think it's integral to my process is, you know, when I watch a prospect or watch a position, I don't jump around from different positions, right?
Right.
If I'm watching offensive tackles, I'll watch all offensive tackles. So I'm sitting there watching, you know, 80 straight tackles, right? Or 80 straight guards. So you see the Zion Johnsons and you'll see the undrafted rookie free agent types. So you're getting a good cross of what elite looks like and what not elite looks like. Right. So now you have a range to compare. And so when I and I go in alphabetical order by school. So by the time I got to Zach Tom, I done seen probably 70 something guards. So I'm thinking, all right, this I'm gonna get through this pretty quickly. He's, you know, it's probably just another easy, you know, mid type talent. And I'm like, whoa, like he's dynamic, you know, he's strong, he's quick. It's like, so I'm adding things up. And when I got to the tally, I'm like, oh snap. Like I was shocked to be that far down school-wise to see someone that was that talented and was able to, that wasn't a Senior Bowl guy that bumped him up to where he was my number three guard in the class. So big fan of him. And when I saw him, I think is more important to the story than him being where he's ranked, because man, I saw him late. And by that time you're like, all right, man, I'm kind of, you know, I'm kind of tired watching the same, because I can't wait to move on. I'm getting close to the end. And you really get shocked by someone that can ball. And you're like, oh snap, this dude, like, and usually I'm just watching three games, but I was like, all right, I like watching this dude play. Let me throw a fourth one in there just to watch, you know? And so that's how he was able to really just stand out to me.
Yeah, no, and that's always when you're scouting, at least, you know, people have different processes, but to me, whenever you see a guy that you obviously hear about and you kind of go through the list and it stands out that way, it's always a pretty revealing feeling. But I want to now switch over. We're going to skip defensive ends and edge rushers. Those guys have been talked about at length, but you know, a position that hasn't really been talked about, at least, you know, from my own kind of echo chamber, defensive tackle. And one guy that I kind of want to get right off the bat with you, your top rated player is Curtis Brooks from Cincinnati. And you know, Cincinnati obviously has had a tremendous year. They're having a lot of players go into the league. Most likely, you know, their cornerback is going to go top 10, quarterback might even go top 32. Pierce is another guy that's been getting some love, but you know, one guy I haven't really heard about too much, Curtis Brooks. What have you seen in him that kind of gives you some optimism for his projection going forward?
His ball get off and his awareness. When you're able to quickly get off the ball and get into the backfield, the job is halfway done. And the fact that he can track the ball well, because you see some guys get into the backfield and have no clue where the ball is. And yes, he'll get back there and quickly find the football and pursue the ball. And he's an active player. So we've seen him do a lot of different things up front. Like I said, you know, he could play many different techniques up front too on the interior, but he's one that doesn't stay blocked. He's aware of what's going on and he's disruptive in the fact that he pursues the ball. So as a runner, it takes away a lot of your, if you have a dumb D lineman that just gets in there, you know, he's not going to find the football. You could easily make him look foolish even more so by cutting it back, but he's someone that is in hot pursuit and tracks the ball well. So it's just, he's a disruptor up front. And another one of these guys that you're watching that you are shocked that ends up grading how he graded based off what you've heard all season. You know, you hear about Devontae White, you hear about all these other defensive tackles, and Brooks, someone that you grade and you're like, damn, he graded out as my top. Like, wow, that's shocking to me, at least.
Yeah, no, and you do have Devontae White number two and Phil Mathis number four, and those seem to be the consensus top two for a lot of other people. But you know, in between there, you have Demetrius Taylor from App State, and I did actually watch a few App State games last year, and he kind of always stood out to me. And you know, one note that you make, you know, with Taylor is that he has excellent football IQ, and you also say that he has a great sense of timing. He finds big plays and game-changing ones. Is that sort of a similar thing you're talking about with Brooks, as far as kind of always having his head up and not being, you know, a guy who gets pushed around easily?
Absolutely, because there's one defensive tackle that that I was watching, and I can't remember his name, but it was a K-State defensive tackle, and he was a nose tackle, and his ball get off was tremendous. And he's splitting double teams like crazy. Like, I'm like, man, this dude is, you know, strong. And so he's splitting the double team, but he's pushing so far upfield to where he's, you know, now he's pass the play. Like, bro, like, all right, you got the initial break. Stop and retrace. Like, where are you going? You know, why are you letting these dudes escort you out the play? And for guys like Taylor and guys like Brooks, once they make that initial breakthrough, it's okay, where's the football? Let me go find somewhere to go get busy. And that's what you see from Taylor, despite being undersized. We saw him have an interception before or a fumble recovery against North Carolina, that big game against North Carolina, I want to say maybe like 2 years ago.
Yep.
And always finding big plays. It's on special teams, blocking kicks, always finding something to do. And when you're disruptive, you're going to find a way to be on the field. And it was him and the linebacker, DeMarco Jackson. I thought my, you know, while I'm watching film, I thought my film was like broken. I'm like, is it playing two times faster? Like, because this dude clearly got from a dead standstill to like, to Levi Lewis in an instant. Like, why is he so fast? And that's just how he runs. So I had a high grade on Jackson too, because, you know, guys that tend to make those type of plays and react those that type of way tend to stand out. And Taylor is one of those guys that stood out too.
Yeah. And then let's quickly go over to linebacker. And I'm glad you kind of mentioned DeMarco Jackson. You have currently have him too. And this has been a take that's sort of brewing in my own head. Related to Chad Muma, I also think he's the best linebacker in this class, and that's no knock on the Georgia guys, because my own opinion is those guys are going to go in the first, as they should. I think they have a lot of upside as prospects, but to me, Muma kind of really reminds me very similarly of the guy that came out a couple years ago, Logan Wilson, and he's had a phenomenal year for the Bengals. You know, are you kind of seeing it? I mean, this is a guy who's really athletic, and he showed at the Senior Bowl too.
Yeah, and I mean, to be able to chase the run, go sideline to sideline, true, only a few linebackers are true sideline guys. Moom mm-hmm. is one, Jackson is one, Anderson is one.
Troy, you know, Anderson.
Troy Anderson.
Yeah.
Quietest kept homeboy is one, too, for Georgia, not N'Kobe Dean, but you know, both Walker and also Tindall.
Yeah.
They're sideline to sideline guys, and that stuff just like, I'll tell you, as a runner, that stuff scares you, because just when you think you got the perimeter, you don't got the perimeter. These dudes right there with you step for step, and they're making impactful plays. So the acceleration and speed that he has to play at this level really stood out. And I'm glad he went down to the Senior Bowl and it kind of checked off boxes too, because if you're able to go sideline to sideline like that, but guys like him, Muma and Anderson are unique because they can go backwards in that same type of acceleration. So they cover a lot of ground and they help you out on both ends of defense. So I'm excited about all those linebackers you mentioned. It's just why I think they're higher graded than someone like N'Kobe Dean for me, at least.
Yeah. And I think Dean will be a good NFL player. And you know, some teams have to sort out, you know, if he fits the thresholds they're looking for as far as his side. But he was a five-star recruit, so he's been, you know, on the radar for a while. But yeah, no, I'm with you. I think Muma and Anderson are outstanding. Whatever team they go to, I think those are going to be two really good players. You know, quarterback.
I know this is a Panthers pod, but I tell you this: if the Panthers found a way to get him, I wouldn't be mad if they took him and had him with Shaq Thompson and company. Like, because man, you talk about increasing the athleticism at the second level. Goodness.
Yeah, no, that's sort of what they're looking for too. And I mean, they look for guys who can, you know, have a lot of versatility within the box and also in coverage too. I mean, they haven't really replaced Luke Kuechly yet, and you know, obviously they have a different defense now, but yeah, it's going to be interesting. Let's close out here with the cornerback group. And you know, I was watching him this morning. Kaiir Elam's tape against Alabama is some of the best tape that I think I've seen in a long time. And I'm just shocked, a guy who went to Florida, you know, a school that consistently produces NFL athletes, especially defensively. We're not talking about this guy as, you know, like a lock to go in the first round. And I'm glad you have him as your cornerback one, because, you know, what I saw on tape, and it looks so fluid. Our good friend Jordan Reed, he was posting some clips at his you know, pro day, and those sometimes can be a little overstated, but just looking at him move, there's like no wasted steps. He plays very low to the ground, which means he has very good core strength and he's well built. I mean, I'm seeing, you know, a really a potential star.
Yeah, and that's the part that's shocking to me too, because it's like he's 6'1". Yes. You know, like that's a tall corner that's playing like a guy that's 5'10", 5'11". And, you know, that's excellent body control. That's excellent athleticism. And if you saw my scout notes, it was like, man, this, you know, I'm nitpicking to try to find a weakness. So, like, there's really no major deficiency within this game. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, and so that's why watching the Bama game was because, you know, you got number one picks and you know, first round talent, great talent at receiver. But watching that Samford game where Samford was cutting Florida up, like they was going toe-to-toe with Florida, and Montrell Washington is the receiver at Samford. So you want to see, okay, did he travel with him or how was he able to handle that game? And Elam was just consistent. Like no matter what tape you put on, he's going to have the same game. And I think that's vital for a player. And that's one of the first things I say about him. He's patient. He doesn't get rattled. He doesn't get jumpy. He's able to play through the hands. It's just, he's a polished player. And I think he's ready to go day one out there on the perimeter.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, Carolina, they obviously traded for CJ Henderson, another former, you know, Gator CBA. And I thought Henderson on tape, he obviously had a lot of people mentioned that some of his tackling wasn't, you know, he wasn't going 100%. And, you know, another thing with Henderson is, I'm not going to say he took plays off, but there were times where he just didn't look like he was fully engaged. And I mean, he certainly had great games against LSU, going against Jamar Chase and, you know, other big time receivers. But, you know, like you said, Elam, I mean, whether he was facing Jameson Williams, which I didn't really see any cornerback be able to kind of contain him as well as Elam did, or he's going against, you know, Samford. I mean, he brought it weekly. And I think there's some injury concerns. I'm not too sure about that. But to me, I agree. I think he's better than, again, just my opinion, I think he's better than both of the Washington guys, who a lot of people are big fans of. But Emery, really want to thank you for taking the time to do this. I know you're really busy this time of the year, but you know, before we do go, what do you have planned not only for, you know, the next few weeks, but also what you plan to cover to draft, whether you're going to be in Vegas or on CBS Sports Network?
Yeah, right now we're working on putting out some content on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/footballgameplan. You know, we're going to do our traditional prospect rankings. We won't do the full 1,000. We'll do top 10 and incorporate some interviews as well with those videos. They always are fun to do. But because we're doing it so late, we got to really truncate how we used to do them. But we're excited about that. And I think CBS will have me in studio this year for the draft, as opposed to going out to Vegas. I know last year I was in Cleveland for the draft. But I think this year they'll have me in studio, which I'm excited about, because that allows you to do more things than you can do at the draft.
Too many distractions in Vegas.
Yeah, way too many distractions. And I don't know how this is going to work out with how they're going to, you know, have that draft set up. Like, I hope they have all kind of waivers and assurances in place, because if they try to do the same thing they wanted to do pre-COVID, when they were going to have the boat and, like, you know, that's just chaos waiting to happen. But I have that. And also, I'm excited about the USFL too. So I know we'll have a TV show or a YouTube show come out covering the USFL as well, which starts April 16th. That's why we have a guide that's as extensive as this, because we know a lot of these guys won't end up in the NFL, but you'll see them on USFL rosters and you'll see them in training camp and things like that. So that's why we do so much, because we know these guys will end up elsewhere and, you know, they'll be playing pro football, getting paid for it.
Yeah, for sure. And I actually thought the XFL was really on a good path before COVID kind of ruined things. I went to a game in DC and they had quite a few fans there, and this is when Pep Hamilton was the head coach. I'm excited that, you know, the USFL, at least something else, is gonna be an option for a lot of these prospects. But Emery, thanks again for joining us. Again, everyone can find him on Twitter at FBALL Game Plan, and tremendous work with the draft and covering a lot of these prospects that you probably never heard of. So Emery, thanks again for joining.
Appreciate you having me on.